another rebound in a crowd by the Brock Ness Monster. Ooh, that would be Pedro. Ooh. Jim Bob Goley, holy moly. How about the Tasmanian Slovenian with the stop, drop, and pop? Hippity hop from the King's Herald Barbershop.
You're listening to the King's Herald Show, a bi-weekly NBA podcast that covers all the ups and downs, ins and outs of your one and only Sacramento Kings. As always, I'm your host, Will Griffith, and with me today, writer for the King's Herald, my co-host, Tony Zipteris. Tony, how's it going?
Will, it's going all right. The King season has kind of fallen off the rails a bit since we last recorded, but there's still time to make a splash, so we'll talk about it on the show today, I'm sure.
He's a former Sacramento Kings head coach, GM and color analyst, general manager of a WNBA champion, Indiana Basketball Hall of Famer. It's the true pride of French Lick himself, Jerry Reynolds. Jerry, how's it going today? Absolute pleasure to have you as always.
Well, great to be with you guys. And obviously a lot of basketball to talk about. Some of it great, some of it not so great. But it's basketball, so it's a good day.
Amen to that. So the regular season is technically ended. We are now in the strange pocket universe known as the postseason, but not technically in the playoffs. The Kings are
playoffs.
Kings are in the play-in, and they're playing the Warriors. And I don't know what to think about that quite yet. We're going to collect our thoughts and talk about it near the end of the show. But I wanted to start off with some discussion of injuries and maybe the impact it's had since our last episode. We've already kind of discussed the Kevin Huerter being out with a dislocated shoulder and torn labrum. He's officially out for the season. But between episodes, we saw sixth man of the year front runner Malik Monk go down in that second game of the week against the Mavs. He's got a sprained knee. Guys, talk to me about Monk's injury a little bit here and how it's affected the Kings these past few weeks.
Well, in my mind, it's affected him tremendously because from an offensive standpoint, he's your second or third best offensive player, depending on how you look at it. And maybe more importantly, he's a guy who can create his own shot. And really, other than Fox, I think he's the only guy that really is good at creating his own shot and is sorely missed. Now, you know, I take it a step further. It's like the fact that the Kings really in crunch situations really don't run much of a half-court offense. They depend on guys kind of creating their own shots as having your second best, if not best, isolation kind of player available really makes it tougher to win. That's for sure.
Tony, what about you?
Yeah, it's a huge loss. And we talked about Malik Monk being the Kings' sixth man of the year candidate, but he's really their third best player. So on another team, it might be, you know, the team's third best starter, if you want to look at it that way, that they're missing. The Kings are missing their third best player, a huge member of the team. And even, you know, looking ahead to the playoffs, he was one of their best Kings last year against the Warriors. You know, same opponent, slightly different rosters on both sides, but they obviously missed Monk during the stretch without him. I think they went, 4-6 since the Malik Monk injury. And then, you know, he's going to be out well into the playoffs. I think Mike Brown said he's not going to be back at least this round for sure. So, you know, it was a huge loss in what led the Kings to landing in the play-in and not, you know, making it into the real quote unquote playoffs. And it will be a huge loss in these play-in games. I guess, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, even just against the Warriors, it's going to be a huge loss because he was so big last year in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, too, is against the Warriors last year, he was the one guy who had played above his stats and his productivity for the season. I think Keegan at the end came close, but the rest were certainly all down a notch or so. So definitely a big loss. And then the other part just for me is it's and I know he doesn't, you know, reading some of the different comments about it is, yeah, that times he's unproductive. Who isn't? But it's also true. How many six men are they that can get 25 points and a half? It's a very small number, gentlemen. And he was the guy that the Kings had that could turn games around coming off the bench and did it on many, many occasions.
Is this a 10 game stretch that we've had basically since Monk's been injured? Is this what you guys would expect for the Kings with their two best shooting guards out? Like, is this is a 4-6 record with a fifth in defensive rating, ninth in offensive rating? Is that what you'd basically expect, having lost your two your starting shooting guard and your sixth man of the year candidate?
Well, I think we always expect more. Not that it's fair to. Yeah. To be honest. In other words, I don't necessarily think it's fair at all. I'm just a fan, so I expect more. I do think a couple of good things came out of it. I mean, we saw that Keon Ellis and Davion Mitchell can play. Here again, maybe not the level you want, but they're not throwaway guys. That's kind of a positive, but it is what it is. This was in my mind, a team with a thin bench, thin roster from a talent standpoint compared to the others teams you're competing with. And so when you lose key guys and you lost two of your top 6-7 guys, that really, really makes it tough. You have to have really strong games from about everybody who trots on the court. And we all know that's rare when that happens for any team.
Yeah, losing Monk gives the Kings, I guess, an excuse to be 4-6 without him, and I think that's fair. It's a fair point to talk about how big of a hole that is, and how the Kings really don't have the roster to fill it. But also, every team around the league does have injuries. The Kings' big injuries just happen to come at the end of the year, so I'm kind of finding myself in this weird spot where I want to excuse some of the Kings' poor play down the stretch to this newfound injury. But they've had pretty good injury luck for most of the year. There was plenty of opportunities earlier in the season to win some games when they were fully healthy, and they dropped some very winnable games. I know we all remember, like, the Detroit game. They've also lost to the Wizards. So, there are instances where the Kings, it didn't have to be this impactful. So I guess that's where I'm kind of frustrated. Like, yes, I understand Monk is out, the team is worse, but the impact could have been lessened if they had maybe taken some of these games a little bit more seriously earlier in the season.
Yeah, Deuce Mason, he brought up some interesting stats. This is what I'm reading off of here. The Kings since March 1st, that's when Keon Ellis entered the rotation. Kings with a 13-11 record, third in defensive rating, 13th in offensive rating. And since Monk's injury, 4-6 record, somehow they're fifth in defensive rating and ninth in offensive rating, and were sub 500 in that time. How do you guys feel about the play of the bench guards? And I won't stop at Keon because Keon's now starting, but adding in there also Davion Mitchell. Jerry, you talked a little bit about that. And maybe even Colby Jones stepping into a little bit of a spot in the absence of Monk and Herter.
Well, I think certainly, obviously, Keon has proven to be pretty good in his starting role, in my opinion. I would say he'd be a terrific third guard. that's for another day. And Davion, I think he's really his shooting. He's really shooting the ball well, shooting with confidence. I mean, I think you can see a player there. Now, it doesn't mean, you might be better off in some sort of a trade if it helps you in another way. I get all that. But I think he's establishing that some value. He's an asset. Sure. He's clearly an asset to some level or another. And I just think he's, I've talked about so much. I just think with small guards, you just have to be a little more patient. You're seeing a better product this year than you saw last year. So there's that. And now with Kobe, I just haven't seen enough to have a real good opinion. I kind of glad they're playing him a little. Because I kind of do have an opinion on Duarte, and so I'll just leave it at that.
Keon Ellis has been so good that it almost makes you forget that Kevin Herter is also injured, just because Keon is outplaying kind of what Herter was doing when he was healthy. He's been out shooting Herter, which is crazy, because you would expect Keon to bring better defense than Herter, but the fact that he's been shooting over 40% on the year with pretty high volume is just incredible. And the Keon Ellis emergence has really kind of saved them. And Davion has been very good. And I think Davion is another player who's going to have a very interesting playoff run, depending on how far the Kings go. Cause he was a guy who Mike Brown cut his minutes in that final Warriors game. After I thought Davion was not that bad in the playoffs. I would even call him a pretty decent contributor in the playoffs. But despite that, Brown still kind of cut his minutes. So now Davion is in a position where he has to play, and he's got a big, huge matchup against Steph Curry against this Warriors team. So I'm curious with what Davion Mitchell we're going to see in the playoffs, because he has been shooting the ball really well, and now he's got an opportunity to really impact a very high profile game. Kind of an opportunity that I think Davion's been waiting for. And it will be interesting to see how he handles that. And if he has a really good game, to Jerry's point, that only increases his value from a player who was really out of the rotation at for a long stretch of the season. So see how far he's come has been pretty impressive.
Jerry, you kind of mentioned Duarte a little bit. I guess I should open this up a little bit. We've seen some inconsistency in the bench since Monk went down. How have you felt they've done as a whole in the absence of Monk in filling that scoring and playmaking role? I don't want to necessarily hold it just to the guards now, but Trey Lyles, some of these guys, have they stepped up enough for you in that regard?
Well, I can't say I'm disappointed. Because I just don't think they have the ability to make up for it. You know, it's one of those things. I think they are who we thought they were, you know? And Trey Lyles is an NBA player that in a limited role can do some pretty good things. When he's shooting it well, you can give him a bigger role. But, and then of course, like I say, with Duarte or Kobe, you're just not sure what you're going to get or count on anything there. Alex Lynn is Alex Lynn. He's going to do what he does. So it's, to me, it goes back to what I said earlier. And I, as a fan, I just thought at the start of the year that unless Vezinikov was going to be really good, this was really a thin roster, bench-wise. And of course, Vezinikov hasn't been good. I mean, I'm not sure that he won't be. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he's had a real great chance due to injuries and different things. So it's just too early to – there's another chapter there to be written. And so – but the point is the bench is not very good.
Tony, how about you? How do you feel like the bench as a whole has played since Monk's gone down?
I can't really add too much to what Jerry said. There's been ups and downs for inconsistent players, so that's kind of what you expect. And I guess the only other point I'd add here is, you know, the Kings had chances to add depth at the trade deadline, and they did not do it. And this is kind of the team that you got. So whatever happens from this point on is kind of on Monty's shoulders to address in the offseason, because I don't think this team is deep enough. And I think you're seeing now what even just a minor move for someone like DeLon Wright or one of the many veterans that could have been had at a very, very low cost maybe could have been the difference between this team being a play-in team or winning a play-in round, because the margin is so tight in the West. I mean, it came down to really the final day. So it highlights how important just a little bit more depth could have been for what their result ended up being this season.
Yeah, we really see it too with Dallas. Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, I thought the Kings were clearly better than Dallas before the trade deadline, and after the trade deadline, even before the Kings played them, I was convinced that the Mavericks were clearly better than the Kings. They added two starters, and basically guys who made them better defensively. They already had the firepower, you know. When you got Doncic and Kyrie Irving, you're going to score. So anyway, so yeah, you're right. I mean, I think that's the thing. I think as fans, probably even the start of the season, you were hoping for a little more activity. And then at the deadline, certainly, even a Royce O'Neal has been a nice pickup for Phoenix, you know, gives them a guy that can guard some different positions and all. So it is what it is, fellows.
Jerry, is there anything you see as a former coach and GM that you would change about how Mike Brown has coached in the absence of these two shooting guards?
Well, I can't say. I think he's done an awfully good job in basically getting Keon Ellis out there. And as Tony pointed out earlier, and I'd feel, you know, I'm not sure if Herter hadn't got hurt, whether Keon would have got the opportunity. And he's clearly played better than Herter was playing. So that's good. He's certainly giving that opportunity, and certainly expanded Davion's role, which he's handled well. My only problem, and this is just an old curmudgeon coach second guessing, I guess, And I think we're lucky, so lucky to have Mike Brown as a coach. But I still say, I wish they had a legitimate crunch time offense. I've said that all year. You know, have some play sets you go to, you know, to, if you want to get Fox shots, whether it's staggered double screens or forcing switches. I mean, just for instance. But, I mean, as opposed to just kind of like we'll go get a shot or we'll take what the defense may give us or not adjust. Because teams know, you know, scouts in this league aren't dumb. They kind of know down the stretch what's going to happen. And I don't think we are very well prepared for it, to be truthful.
Yeah, I think you could even see that in that last play against the Phoenix Suns. Bradley Beal said, like, I knew what the play was going to be. They're going to spread out, give it to Fox, and let him work. And that level of predictability cost them a game.
Yeah, really. And, I mean, you know, the old kind of 1-4 flat, we saw that with Tyreek Evans. And now the play is a good play if you've got Jordan or Kobe. Don't get me wrong. Now, I love Fox, but he is not either one of those guys. and he's not going to be next year either. No. And so that's that. The other thing, I guess I sort of was surprised that Mike didn't just let it play out rather than calling a timeout. Because I thought if you want Fox to have the ball and get a shot, boy, get it in and go in the open court is way easier for him, and way harder for them to get the second, third guy running at. Sure. So anyway, I feel better now. Got it out of my system.
Tony, is there anything as a fan that you notice that you might wish upon Mike Brown to have changed in the absence of Monk and Herter?
For the rotation, not really. I think he was sort of backed into a corner with the players on the roster. I mean, who else? There is no one else. He tried everything. So, like, there's no, what's the Rick Pitino quote? Like, Larry Bird's not coming through that door. Like, there's no one, like, it's not, there's no other talent here. But to Jerry's point, I have been pretty frustrated by the offense. And this game sticks out in my mind because I wrote the recap for it on the Kings Herald. But that Knicks game, again, another really big game for the Kings. And down the stretch in the fourth quarter, it wasn't just the iso ball that was frustrating. It was they went down by a couple points, and it was six shots in a row were all threes, and they were all misses, and they were contested threes. And this team just relying on the three-point shot in those closing moments drives me insane. And to Jerry's point, they don't have Michael Jordan, but last year they kind of did with Fox being this elite clutch player. And this year, his finishing at the rim is down, his two-point volume is down because he's just taking way more threes. So even the very best version of Fox we've seen has not been this year's crunch time version of Fox. This year's Fox is way more jump shots, way more three-pointers. He's not attacking the rim. He's not getting to the line as much in those crunch moments. So I think, you know, even if you were going to play iso ball through Fox in crunch time, they've done that way better than they're doing it this year. This year, it is not working. Fox is either settling for jumpers or other players are kind of just chucking threes without much care. And I personally don't know how much blame to put on Mike Brown, because I have to assume he doesn't love all these shots they're taking, but he also has been encouraging them to take a lot of threes. So I do think in some ways it's kind of baked into these guys to shoot when they're open. And sometimes they may think they're open when they're not, and something's getting lost in translation there. But I have not loved Mike Brown's coaching offensively this year. But I do think as far as the rotation goes, he's done the best he could with the guys he has on the roster.
You know, the other thing with Fox, I think if you're really committed and, you know, that he's going to be your closer, as you probably should be, he's a most talented guy and he creates the most defensive problems. But they really need to have things. He's going to draw people, so find them. Basically, I mean, it. I don't want to make a comparison to Jordan, but one thing Jordan would do would draw the double. He'd find the open guy for the easy shot. Yeah. And I don't think De'Aaron's really particularly good at that.
Yeah.
You know, that he still thinks he can go get a shot against two or three guys. And that really, you know, is should be part of your offense. Okay. We know you'll draw a double team. So this is what we need to be looking for, you know, and it's no different than a quarterback knowing that the first option is probably going to be covered. So let's get to the second one. So anyway, I got it out of my system. Go ahead.
How much of that, how much of the onus of that is on Mike Brown to tell Fox you need to be looking for that versus just letting him play and, hey, you, I trust you, go make the decision. How much of that would be on Fox versus Brown in terms of those decisions?
Well, it's on both of them, but I, you know, you just can't know what Brown has told him, you know, but I think that's kind of why, even for a player as gifted as Fox, if you really have a sequence of movements that, okay, this, you're going to get the ball in this situation, but this is probably what's going to happen. So be looking. If you can't get your shot, look for this. And then if that's not there, this movement will be there for an open shot for somebody. You know, look for Keegan will be open if his man's off, you know, that sort of thing. Sure. And I mean, and it really isn't brain surgeon. I mean, surgery, I mean, you know, it's it can be practiced. I mean, you can pretty well tell what teams are going to do. I think in late game situations, they're all going to double him.
Yeah.
You know, so, okay. We know that's good. We know he's going to be doubled. And we should have faith that maybe Keegan Murray or Harrison Barnes or Keon Ellis will make an open shot. And
how have you guys seen the adjustment? I asked about the bench now. I guess we should talk about the starters. The adjustment with Fox and Sabonis specifically without Monk. I know there's been people that have been kind of mentioning how much Sabonis has struggled minus Monk in the lineup. How have you guys seen the stars respond to these guys being out?
Well, certainly Sabonis, I think, has missed him. I mean, on two fronts. I think overall Domas has played pretty well with the, you know, certainly with the exception of that pass against Phoenix will go down in infamy as the worst pass he's made in his career. But, I think we're with Domas, Monk got him two baskets a game.
Yeah.
You know, and Domas got Fox two baskets. I mean, got Monk two baskets a game. So that was two assists that he's not getting easy assists that he's getting, and he's not getting basically 4 points, easy 4 points that Monk would get him. Yeah. And so it's showing up, and I'm not surprised. Honestly, that was predictable because the other guys on the screen roll situations, they just can't, especially Fox is not good at it at all. Finding him in traffic, you know, the little bounce passes that Monk does. Keon Ellis is much better, and Davion's much better, really. So here again, I think that would be something that probably could be improved with Fox and Domas is, you know, screen roll and you draw to find him, you know. So...
Tony, what about you? How have you felt Fox and Sabonis has done adjusting to life without Monk?
I think Fox has been pretty good. He had a rough stretch post All-Star break, but in April, he's been very good again, back up to 28 points per game. I think when I looked at it this morning, he was shooting 40% from three in April. So it's only been, you know, eight games, but I think he's finished the season strong. Jerry touched on Sabonis' struggles. I also think Sabonis, you know, we talked about how good Keon's been and how much that makes us not miss Herter so much. But if any player misses Herter, I think Domas and Herter had a very good dribble handoff game. That's where he would pick up assists when Herter was shooting well. So if you look at, you know, Monk and Herter together are two players that really played well with Sabonis. I'm not terribly surprised that his numbers have kind of fallen off a little bit the last 10 or so games. But I think by and large, both of those guys are still playing at a very high level. And to get into some of the other starters, I guess, I think this is where, you know, Keegan Murray and Harrison Barnes have also both been fairly inconsistent since Monk went down. And then that puts just more pressure on everyone because now Fox really needs to be great and Sabonis really needs to be great. And he hasn't always been great because you don't really know what you're getting out of Barnes all year. And Keegan, unfortunately, you know, we've talked about his defensive improvement all year, but his offense is still kind of hit or miss game to game. So they're really missing consistency both off the bench because they don't have Monk there and the starting unit. You know, in this version of it without Monk has also not been very consistent, which is why I'm so scared heading into the postseason because this team is really not playing their best basketball in a few different areas.
You know, one last thing on Sabonis, and I love reading the Herald, and a lot of guys have different thoughts. Well, you need more offense from Sabonis than he did. No, well, that's not who he is. I mean, Domantas Sabonis is going to average 19 points. He's going to take 12 shots to get his 19 points. He's going to shoot 60%. He's going to get 12 plus rebounds. He's going to get 8 assists. He's done that for 5 years. So, and that's really his value. You can put it in the book for the most part. You know, when he only gets 14 points, he might get 15 rebounds. Okay. But I mean, what you need is Keegan Murray to get continued improve, which he's done a marvelous job, but you need some consistent offense from Harrison Barnes in this particular circumstance. I mean, and I think it's just about as simple as that. To expect Sabonis to be something that he's not, a 25-point scorer, is foolish. Yeah. I mean, it takes away from really his real value of just being highly productive in all those areas.
Jerry, what would you say as a coach to a guy like Keegan, who's in his second year, who suddenly thrusts into a bigger role with the absence of Monk, who during that stretch kind of had nights where it was like 10, 12 points, and then he had nights where it was 22 or 25 points. What do you tell to a kid that young and how to kind of adjust with Monk being out?
Well, what I would tell him, I would say, Keegan, you have been terrific. You have made your improvements miraculous in your second year, more than we could have expected, defensively as well as offensively. But we need more, and so feel free to force the issue a little bit, hunt for shots, be a little bit hungry. Monk was hungry; he's a hungry scorer. Fox is they're supposed to be, and. You know, basically, you haven't been. You're more than you were last year. But go ahead and be hungry. Go, if you chuck up a bad one now and then, we'll just let it slide. But he's one of those guys. I'd say I'd pat him on the butt on Monday and Tuesday, and I wouldn't skip Wednesday. I'd just keep patting.
Now, on the other hand, I'm looking at Harrison Barnes' stats since Malik Monk went out. We're looking at 12.3 points. He's shooting 43% from the field, 33% from deep on 4.5 attempts, 1.5 assists, and less than 4 rebounds. What would you say to Harrison Barnes during this time where you really need him as the veteran leader to step up? And how would you address his performance during this time?
I think with Harrison, he's a veteran. I'd just go say, hey, Harrison, you've done it. Put your big boy pants on. We need you to be consistently good. We need 15, 18 points out of you. If we don't get it, our chances of winning aren't good. So, you've been to the county fair. You've been a lead guy at Dallas. You've played on the championship team. You've certainly had an important role here. Now your role is more important. So get it done.
I'm curious, Jerry, maybe, and Tony too, you can address this. How do you explain a game like against the Knicks where he had he was just almost zeros across the board? He played only 15 minutes, but how do you explain a game like that with Harrison Barnes where he is a veteran guy? He's been able to score almost 20 a night in Dallas, where he just those nights where he scores 2 points and gets nothing else done, or scores 0 points and doesn't get anything else done. How do you explain that?
I can't. I mean, I don't know, maybe you and Tony can, but I just don't understand. I mean, I've seen really good, solid players, which, he's shown us himself to be most of the time, have bad games, but not to become invisible, and we've seen with Harrison, that's happened several times, invisible or near invisible. And I think if I were Coach Brown, I think I would probably be honest with you. I'd probably be a little bit mean with him. I might say harsh words to him.
Tony, can you explain this?
Not really. I mean, this has been Harrison Barnes all year. And, we've talked about the Kings offense lacking some structure at times. And I would say no one gets less plays called for them than Harrison Barnes. And I'm not, and that doesn't take things off of Barnes as far as the blame goes, but I'm also not entirely sure why. And the one stat that I look to with Harrison Barnes is, you know, 2 years ago, 5.4 free throws a game. Last year, five free throws a game. This year, 2.5 free throws a game. He's not getting the ball in the post at all anymore. And that used to be a play the Kings would go to. Harrison Barnes also used to be a pretty decent transition player, finishing with Euro steps and and-ones going to the rim. And they're just, he's been relegated to a spot shooter most of the time. And then also, you know, there's really just no place for him. So it's easy to get lost in the shuffle when you're in the corner and you're not really getting your number called. I think Harrison Barnes, it's sort of a chicken and egg thing where he's been so unproductive that maybe that's why they're not running as many plays for him. But at this point in the year, you don't have options anymore. You know, you got to, maybe that's something you run off the bench. You know, you stagger some minutes, you have Barnes running with the second unit more, and you go with some post-ups and you just try and slow the game down and get him the ball. I don't know if that will work. Cause again, Harris, like you mentioned, Will, his stats even recently have been even lower than over the year. So he could also be slumping at the moment, which is bad timing, but they're going to need something more out of him. And if I'm not going to figure it out. So hopefully Mike Brown can.
Yeah, you can't beat Golden State unless he has a solid game. You just can't, you don't get enough points. And I, just like Tony said, I've kind of alluded to that during the years that I don't know why they don't try to post him up more, you know, play a little high, low post or, you know, have him cut to the basket. You don't have to plant him in there, but cut him to the basket and get a position. It's a lot easier that way. And maybe call his number or early, you know, get him going early, get him, make sure that he's a real objective for you early in the game to get some points on the board, maybe get to feeling like he's part of it. So yeah, that'd just be my only thoughts, but you know, hey, Coach Brown, you know, I think he and his staff of, 20 all need to do whatever they can to get him going.
It terrifies me that it's going to come down to God flipping a coin and figuring out if Harrison Barnes is going to score 20 or if he's going to score under 10, because those are the only two scenarios in my life. And the mm-hmm. King season basically comes down to, does Harrison Barnes show up on Tuesday night? Okay, before we get started on this next chapter, let's kind of run through the play-in for those who might not be aware of how it works. The Western Conference finished with the Pelicans and Lakers finishing 7th and 8th with the 7th and 8th best records in the West. So they're playing Tuesday night. The winner becomes the 7th seed in the playoffs. They have the opportunity to go up against the defending champion Nuggets. The losers of Pelicans Lakers then get to await the winner of Kings and Warriors, who are playing for the final spot in the playoffs. And the winner of whoever wins between the Kings and Warriors playing the loser of Pelicans Lakers winds up with the 8th spot and gets to take on the youngest number one seed in history, the recent shame of the NBA, absolute terrible, disgusting tankers themselves, the Oklahoma City Thunder. So in a nutshell, for Kings fans, we got to beat the Golden State Warriors. We got to beat the Pelicans or the Lakers. You lose either, season's done. How confident are you guys going into Tuesday night in the Kings beating this version of the Warriors?
Well, I'm not confident. I wish I was. But the reason I'm not is twofold. Steph Curry and Steve Kerr. That's why. I mean, it's a one-game playoff, and they got the best player and the most proven coach.
Tony, what about you?
Yeah, I am equally not optimistic. Doesn't mean it's impossible. But I think you'd be foolish to sit here and say like, oh yeah, the Kings have this, or even that the Kings would be favored. I mean, the Warriors have not had a great year, but they're 10-2 in the last 12. They seem to have figured some things out. The Kings, again, we talked about it for the last half an hour, not playing their best basketball. Warriors eliminated the Kings last year. You know, there's a lot of the Kings have a lot riding on this, maybe more than the Warriors in some ways. Although if you're a Warriors fan, you might say that's crazy, but we've also seen the Kings not play well under pressure this year from the games that I'm deciding to count as under pressure games. Like I thought the two losses back to back against Dallas were just really, those are big games and they really flopped on both of them. There's been several other games down the stretch that I've kind of earmarked as big games, depending on, you know, seeding circumstances or who they're playing, and the Kings just have not shown up in enough of those opportunities. So I'm terrified that this game could be a blowout from the beginning. I think that's on the table. Optimistic side, this is not an impossible to defeat Warriors team. I just think you've got to consider them the favorites in this one game play-in scenario.
Okay, so in that case, what do the Kings have to do to get to the second game of the play-in? What do the Kings specifically have to do against the Warriors in order to beat them and move on?
Well, I think they really have to control Steph Curry. Easy to say, hard to do. How can they do that? I do think they have a better chance of doing that than they did last year because of Ellis and Davion Mitchell, and Terrence Davis isn't on the roster. So that helps. I think with Fox, he's become a much better defender. I mean, in other words, I think keeping fresh, quick defenders on him, you know, you've got a chance. I mean, Steph is human, and sometimes he does wear down, and sometimes he does miss shots. And if you can make the game hard for Steph, then you make it hard for the Warriors.
So now if we're planning for failure, I just want to set this option off, obviously, because we're a little pessimistic, but also realistic in that way. What are the implications of losing out on this game? What are the implications? What happens? Say the Kings lose to the Warriors. They do not make the playoffs this season. You can give me short-term or long-term. We can talk about Atlanta's pick that we owe. We can talk about Monk's free agency, ability to trade future assets. What do you guys see? Prognosticate for me a little bit how the Kings go into the offseason if they can't get it done against the Warriors on Tuesday night.
Well, I think it'd be pretty clear, I think, to Monty and Coach Brown that they really need to try to add to the roster, that they need more, you know, more talent. Now, how do you get it? That's very difficult. But and maybe, you know, they could even possibly look into figuring out how to get the pick back. Certainly, I think that might be, you know, or if you really want it, I don't know why you necessarily want it this year, but because you might really need, you need some veteran players, I think, young veteran players, and a 19 or 20 year old is probably not going to move the needle at all. So I think it's clearly it'd be viewed as a disappointment to the fans, and you know, I think we all expected the team. I didn't expect it to be third or anything. I'm different than a lot of, I know, some of the writers and commentators, you know, on the Herald. This wasn't a championship contender as when the September. So I didn't expect it to be in March either. I thought it'd be a little better than they've turned out, but only a little better. Bringing the same guys back, you're probably going to get the same results for the most part. The league, and of course the league got better, which we knew that was going to happen, and that made it tougher. But I've told you a story, but I always remember when I was thinking about the Kings, I mean, and they've had a terrific year. I've enjoyed the heck out of them. One of the seven best records in the history of the franchise, and we shouldn't, we know where we were 3 or 4 years ago, so it's hard to bitch very much. But I always remember Coach, I was listening to him on the radio when I was in high school, or maybe I might even been a coach in college time. Anyway, he's well-known coach from Petersburg, Indiana. And they had him on the radio, and they, you know, the preseason kind of thing, and talking about, well, Coach, what kind of team are you going to have? He said, well, I don't think we'll be very good. We got all the same old boys back. and you know, so I mean, it wasn't very encouraging to those same old boys, but.
Tony, how do you feel about the same old boys going into the offseason this year?
Well, you know, I want to say that would be like an unacceptable trajectory for this roster to bring back anything that really even closely resembles this. I mean, they made some fringe changes last summer, but this is the same team they had last year for the most part. And I don't think that we can say that again going into next year really whether they lose against the Warriors or not, because I think the team has clear holes they need to fill. But I think losing to the Warriors would be bad for this team. You know, the same team twice in a row, you can't get over the hump. You fall to the play-in. You're clearly going in the wrong direction, is what we can kind of say. So that trend is scary. But one thing, kind of going back to, you know, what needs to happen for the Kings to actually win the Warriors game. The Warriors are a little bit different than they were in last year's playoffs. They're 9-2 with Trayce Jackson-Davis in the starting lineup. Kevin Looney is now a bench center, which to me really changes the dynamic for how they guard Sabonis or what Sabonis's mindset's going to be to start the game. And I really feel like Sabonis' entire season, maybe this is me putting too much of a narrative spin on how his stock took a hit in that Warrior series, but he's been on a mission to kind of get back to this point. He probably missed the All-Star game because of the residual effects of the Warriors series kind of collapse. So now is a great opportunity for Sabonis to really shut some people up. And I think if the Kings win, at least part of it will be on Sabonis. Maybe it's taking advantage of Trayce Jackson-Davis because his Looney is not in that starting lineup anymore. Or maybe Kerr does something crazy and put Looney back in the starting lineup, despite the fact that they've been playing so good since Trayce Jackson-Davis kind of took that role. But I'm very curious to see what Sabonis does in this Warriors game, because he has an opportunity to right a lot of wrongs and kind of change the way people think about him on a national scale coming off of last year's series. So for all the bad things that I feel like we'll kind of get thrown at the Kings if they lose, there is a tremendous amount of upside to how people view the Kings or what the Kings' attitude will be like heading into the free agency if they can kind of seize the moment and take this win. And for as pessimistic as you might be, it's definitely possible. Like, there's little things here and there that the Kings can do to win this series. And then you have the opportunity to go on one of the more crazy runs, because waiting for you is the Pelicans, who you're 0-5 against, which would be a great second game to win, or the Lakers, with which you could say you took down the Warriors and the Lakers in the same postseason run. So there is, like, there's obviously some negatives that can happen, but the upside of actually coming through this playoff or play-in scenario is also, you know, just as big as I view the negatives of losing.
Oh, the idea of, yeah, beating the Warriors and Lakers, I mean, that would bring joy. I mean, I wouldn't care if they go 1-4 against anybody, you know. I mean, that'd just be, certainly a step up. But, you know, some fans wouldn't see it that way, but I certainly would. And, but yeah, and I agree with Tony completely there. It's one of those things where this team is going to be viewed as a disappointment, and that, you know, you need an infusion of some talent. I don't think that's a surprise by anyone. You know, I always go back to the first couple of years of the Kings were becoming really good, is that it was a work in progress. You know, that the second year was a disappointment because they won 44 games and got swept in the playoffs. Everybody expected them to be better. And, well, they just weren't. The same guys. And then basically Doug Christie was added and Bobby Jackson, and then they weren't the same. And then in 155 games. So, you know, and I think that's just exactly where this team is. They've got to add a couple players that are starting caliber players. They don't have to, you're not probably going to get a Hall of Famer here. You know, I mean, you're not going to get Paul George, although I'm not sure what that would do anyway. But I mean, I think, you know, just kind of like what Dallas did, get two guys who are good enough to start. You know, if the Kings could get two guys better than current starters, then they could be a serious contender.
Yeah. Okay, so assuming that we win Tuesday night, Tony, you started to touch on this. Which demon are you guys looking to exercise on Friday? Are you trying to get the first win in 6 tries against the Pelicans? Or are you trying to beat the Referee Association's Team of the Year, brought to you by DraftKings Los Angeles Lakers? Which of those teams are you looking to play in a matchup if they can end up exercising their first Warriors demon?
Well, I mean, I guess for me, I just, the thought of losing to the Lakers is just, I can't wrap my head around it. I just can't do it. I mean, and the Warriors, you know, they're almost to that level. You know, they've moved into near hatred territory, and I'm ashamed of myself because they're, you know, they're generally speaking, they got a lot of classy people over there, but I still don't have to like them. I'm jealous, but the Lakers, that's another issue. I'm sick of them. I'm sick of everything about them. And I know the league would love to see them advance. I mean, and they can say whatever they want, but I know it, and everybody else knows it. And you know, the Warriors and the Lakers got talked about more on national media than teams way better all year long.
Yep.
Which, so anyway, that's how I feel. I don't like them.
Tony, the Lakers are 11-3 since like the middle of March. Are you looking to play the team that's hot, or looking to play the team that the Kings just absolutely cannot find a way to beat?
Man, 0-5 is like, before this year, an impossible thing to do against one team. Like, you could only go in five if you play them in the tournament.
Yeah, that was like the Boston Celtics, Syracuse Nationals. You know, you had to go way back for that.
Yeah. I saw it today, and I was like, wait, how did they go 0-5? And then I had to remember, oh yeah, it was the so. I mean, that's impressive to lose to a team like that. That shows you that they're just better than you, to me. So I don't know. My instinct is to take the Lakers. Maybe you lose that game too. But again, I'm kind of falling in love with the upside of being able to say you took down the Lakers and the Warriors en route to also taking down the one seed as an 8-1 matchup. So there's like this could be the most Cinderella-ist of stories if the Kings were to pull it off. And as like unlikely as it is, I just rather see them go for it. Like, this season is kind of in shambles in my mind the last 2 weeks anyways. So if they can pull off something miraculous here, let's go for that. I don't need to see the Pelicans for the seventh time.
Yeah, they've proven a few things to me. I don't know if I think it will.
No, I was just going to say, I like the idea of like maybe for the second year in the row, possibly ending the Warriors dynasty, like being the period at the end of that sentence with Klay having a free agency and Draymond being who Draymond is, and then going on and like maybe doing something with the Lakers, where the Lakers obviously not making the playoffs would be a big call for change there. I'm terrified of the Pelicans. That's one of those things, like, I can squint and see hope against Lakers. I can open my eyes as wide as I can, and I can't see much hope against the Pelicans. CJ McCollum just like is possessed by another spirit when he has to play the team that promised to draft him and didn't. And I can't blame him for it. So I'd much rather the Cinderella story against the two California teams than have to face off and lose to the Pelicans for the sixth time in a single season. All right, Tony, why don't we run down to you for the Patreon question of the day?
All right, thanks, Will. On every episode of this podcast, we ask at least one question from our Kings Herald patrons. You can submit questions at patreon.com/KingsHerald or the website, or to one of us on Twitter. And if you don't hear your question answered in the main show here, once a month we record a Patreon-exclusive Q&A where all the leftover questions get asked. So keep submitting questions. They will get answered eventually. Today's question comes from Tim. And I thought this is a good question by Tim, and kind of what I was talking about with the Warrior series already. But Tim asks, what does Sabonis need to do differently so he's not taken out of the game against the Warriors like last season?
Well, I think the main thing is take open shots. You know, he's not a bad shooter. I mean, he can make the 15-foot shot. He shoots 37% or 38% from three. They're going to give you those shots. Take them. And then basically understand that they will try to take away your dribble handoffs a little bit, and they're going to double you whenever they can there. And just move the ball quicker. I think that's one of where he gets in trouble, is he tries to play against double teams, not necessarily to score, but just try to play against double teams to find teammates. It's like the trick against double teams is pass the ball before you get trapped. and that's been a weakness of him in that series. And occasionally we've seen it this year leading to turnover. So those would be the only things. I mean, you know, he's going to play hard. He's not looking to score particularly, but he needs to look for himself a little bit more. You know, that's all I'd say. I think that's in one of his real flaws, is he's too unselfish. He's always looking for his teammates to a fault. In this series or this game, Steve Kerr is going to make sure, or I think it will try to make sure that he has some open looks. So take them.
Will, is there anything you're looking for Sabonis specifically for this game against the Warriors? I know everyone has talked about Sabonis against the Warriors all year, but what's your view of this whole scenario we find ourselves back into?
Trayce Jackson-Davis has played really well since jumping into that starting lineup for them. I think that I think Sabonis can body Trayce Jackson-Davis. I think he can, like, he's not Kevon Looney, and like that's enough for Sabonis to go, okay, I can handle this kid. He is a rookie. He's playing well, but he's still a rookie. And there's an opportunity there to force Steve Kerr into putting Kevon Looney into the game, or force Draymond Green to have to do some silly Draymond Green shit in order to get into Sabonis' head. I'm looking forward to it. I think if the Kings go out and Sabonis like does what he does, like they won't lose because of Sabonis. Where there were times in the playoffs where I kind of went, man, like I almost wish there was somebody else out there than Sabonis because he's just getting eaten alive. I don't think Sabonis comes into this game seeing Trayce Jackson-Davis and feels the same level of like, it's the Warriors. I don't know about this one. I think he goes in confident and he's okay. And if not, I'm going to just turn off my phone. I will not be on Twitter all summer. Yeah. I will not be on Twitter all fall. I'll see you guys in the playoffs next year because it's going to get real ugly with the discourse. And I can't think of anything I hate more than if Sabonis has a really, really bad game against the Warriors in a win or go home situation.
Yeah, for me, I remember it was only 5 minutes into game one and they were playing off Sabonis so much. And I was like, oh, shit, I've seen people play off Sabonis. I've never seen it like this before. And then another 5 minutes went by and I realized, oh, shit, the Kings really don't have any answer for this. Like they were playing so far off Sabonis and there was no adjustment to get something else to work off that defense. So even if they're playing off of Sabonis, and like Jerry said, I wanted to shoot the ball, but let's say Sabonis misses his first couple shots. To me, I want to see the Kings, whether it's Mike Brown, Sabonis, maybe the last game of Jordy Fernandez on the bench for the Kings. Yeah. Someone has got to figure out a way that playing off Sabonis to the degree the Warriors did does not totally screw up their entire offense. So that can't happen again. Whatever the outcome is, it can't be as simple as we're going to give Sabonis a ton of space and the Kings are not going to be able to figure this out. So whether it's Sabonis either hitting shots or figuring out how to be effective despite that, or someone on the coaching staff figuring out how to attack a defense like that, they can't go out the same way.
Well, Jerry, it's over to you for the Reynolds wrap up. What do you got for us today?
Well, I don't have a lot, but the one thing I just have to comment on is, of course, reading Greg Wistinger today, and I saw one of the all-time great lines, and I I probably cackled for about 5 minutes on my own air. But Rick Schmitz talked about the game, talking about it'd be between the Splash Brothers and the Spray Brothers, and I thought, now you know, isn't that hit it right between the eyes, And you know, the Spray Brothers, I'm, you know, sometimes, boy, I don't know about this spraying stuff. I think I got to be honest with you. But anyway, but I thought that was, bless Rick Schmitz's heart. I mean, that was a home run. That was a grand slammer.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you guys for tuning into another episode. We're going to have a bonus episode sometime this week, regardless of whether or not the Kings wind up making the play-in, the second game of the play-in, or their season is over. We're going to have a Patreon episode that discusses all that will answer any questions you guys have for us, that'll go over the rest of the NBA's matchups. You know, I want to know if the Kings have a shot to play my Thunder as an 8-1 thing. I want to know what Jerry thinks about the Clippers versus Mavericks. That'll be on a special episode that we'll release prior to Friday's game. So stay tuned for that. And regardless of whether or not the Kings make it or not, this has been a fantastic season of getting to do this with Tony and Jerry. We want to thank you guys for tuning in. That's the reason why I get to, I get blessed with this job, so to speak. And so thank you so much. And we'll see you at the end of the week for a special Patreon bonus episode.